You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Ron Norsworthy. Ron, thanks so much for being with me today.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
Ron, we're going to talk about your show at Edwin Houck Gallery, and I'm really looking forward to this. This is a show that just recently came down. It's called The American Dream, or rather, American Dream. And before we talk about specific works, I'd love to talk about your process here, because there's a number of things happening. There's so much going on in these works. What is your process like? Do you begin with sketches, ideas? How do they build up?
That's interesting. So you can tell a little bit of my process from the title. I am a set designer by training, and I think a little bit of I'm very process oriented as a result. I think that my ideas usually come to me as sort of spaces, but spaces realized through sort of threads of dreams or memories or ideas. And then they sort of become these spaces that are inhabited by figures that are engaging with them in kind of a way. But my process is pretty involved. So it starts with a digital collage, and it's always a process, and if I could pull back a little bit, it's always a process of assembling or extracting something. So all of my source material is found on the internet. I just Google, and I just go down the rabbit hole. So I might find an image from a film still, or I might grab a film still from my computer screen, and I might take something from there, or a plant from a Home Depot ad. I kid you not. But it's very kind of high-low, and objects for me are that I use in my process are all loaded with meaning. So they call to me in one way or another, and I arrange them in a digital collage, extracting them from whatever context they were in. They're put in a new context in the digital collage, and then I take the digital collage and pull it apart and put each of the elements of that collage on a different wooden layer. So the work ends up being collages in relief and photos applied to layers of plywood that are then layered onto themselves. So they're constructed objects at the end of the day.
Well, they sure are. So, to talk a little bit about what you said at the beginning, too, there's you have a background in theater that's part of who you are. These all are, in some ways, could we say, like vignettes, theatrical vignettes.
They're mise-en-scène, yeah. And those are my background is actually not in theater, but in film set design and music video set design. So I've done a little bit of theater, but it's mostly a sort of a cinematic, filmic. And Edwin Houck is a photography gallery, so my work, it's helpful if my work is looked at in the context of photography, the history of photography, and how we use the photographed image or an image to see ourselves and to help define our identities and, you know, seeing ourselves through photography.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I mean, photography's role there. I think of like Gregory Crutzen and there's a photographer that comes to mind who also did these vignettes indoors that were kind of otherworldly, almost.
Yes.
Like
and
cinematic too, really.
Yes, I've been such a fan of his, and I think it's the way that one, especially as a production designer, it's smoke and mirrors, but it's the how an illusion is created. And I love that there are artists that are working similarly in that you know, Knutson is a great example of how you can sort of dramatize the banal, how you can dramatize the pedestrian, how you can take something and elevate it, or even, I don't like that elevation thing, but like maybe see it as this really cool thing that we might not ordinarily pay attention to, but because of the way it's framed, because of the way it's lit. And I think that sort of idea of performance in our own lives is something that is pretty legible in my work as well.
Let's talk about some of the specific works because, yeah, that it is, of course. I love all the colors and movement inside this. It's great. There was a number of them, of course, I kind of looked at, investigate more. There's one called "Do You Know What You're Looking For?" I don't know if that's a quote from a song, but this one stands out a little bit to me. Looks like there's only one figure in it, but it's a scene that isn't easy to read right away, right? We're
No,
only
and
looking at the
that's,
back of the figure.
yeah, that's really important to me because I think that there's in my vocabulary, you'll often find a figure might be in focus, might be not be out of focus, they might be in motion a little bit, but the back, I think that in my vocabulary, you'll find thresholds and mirrors and figures that are maybe unaware that we are looking at them. There's this kind of voyeuristic quality to this work in particular. And the figure is sort of, if there's there, what I'm always doing in my work on some level is creating suggesting a narrative, but it is your experience that might inform what this narrative is. But I give lots of clues, and then you write the story. You write the story. So, in this particular image, there is a boy on a bike. You can tell it's a bit retro because of the furnishings, because of the bike. He's turned around, looking at potentially a basket of laundry. His name, if you, the longer you spend with my work, too, the more clues that you'll notice, and the more cultural references there are. So there's one of those old school nameplates on the bike, on the back of the bike, and it says Toby, which was my nickname as a kid growing up. So that might be me on the bike. I had a similar Schwinn Stingray bike that was yellow. That was a little bit like this bike. But then there's other things in the scene. So the thresholds are a way of kind of looking in. It's a way of kind of breaking the fourth wall, breaking the picture plane, and allowing this built up in relief image to kind of come towards you, or you to come towards it. And yeah, there's an album cover from one of my favorite movies as the soundtrack to the film Mahogany, which came out in 1975 or 76, I don't remember, starring Diana Ross and Billy Dee Williams. And then there is a Sankofa sculpture that is sitting on a marble plinth, and it's a bird that's looking over his shoulder. And in Western African Yoruban culture, it essentially means you can't know where you're going unless you know where you came from. And that also ties to the name of the title track from the film, theme for Mahogany, Do You Know Where You're Going To? So the boy and the bird are kind of mimicking each other's poses, and the boy's considering, I think, contemplating folding the basket of laundry. I'm not sure if
And
that's going to happen or not.
you said, yeah. And Toby, that was your nickname. I mean, I like that there's those kind of insights in there. That was your
Yeah,
nickname as a
there's
child.
my work is loaded. It's loaded. I'm sorry to interrupt you. It's loaded with often with personal references, but I think also too the work wants to the work is kind of speaking to time and memory and sort of the imperfectness of memory and our attachment to objects and things and smells even and sounds and pieces of our lives that we have a kind of particular mnemonic attachment with, you know, or connection to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that one too, the Stingray bike, you know, I had a bike like that, you know.
Who didn't, if we were lucky enough to have a bike and somewhere to ride it? That was
as I remember, I don't know why it comes to mind, but that bar in the back of it was called a sissy bar.
A sissy bar,
I don't know.
Right. Right.
I don't know why they called it, but that was the cool thing to have. You know?
Yeah, you wanted it. Mine, that's where this bike was different than my bike, because I think if I had my, you know, my druthers, I would have had a really tall sissy bar like the one that's depicted. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's also too, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this realm. It's relatively new, but field of philosophical inquiry, but it's called speculative realism, and I really do kind of rely on that. But it's this post-Jungian idea that that objects can exist outside of our knowledge of them, and that they carry their own systems, their own languages, if you will, and that perhaps opposite of what we may think, it's kind of human-centric, this idea that we're drawn to an object, but what if the object draws us to it? And so a lot of my works are composed with that theory in mind. So, you know, I can't tell you what something means for you, but when I think about, like, the sissy bar and the fact that I'm a Black queer guy who grew up in Iowa at a certain time, you know, like, ooh, to be called a sissy, was that, what does that mean? And how am I grappling with this idea of perhaps being a sissy and the way that kind of impacts how you navigate as a child, and then also how you navigate that memory as an adult.
Right, because for me, that memory, when I think of the sissy bar, I can't imagine it was a reference to being queer then. I don't know what it was.
No, not at all.
Because it was just like what you wanted to have. The coolest kid on the block had a
right.
sissy bar, just like is pictured in your work here, right?
Right. But I was thinking like sissy, oh, wow, as I was saying, and I'm like, oh, that's a triggering, loaded word for me, you know? So I don't think I actually uttered the words, even though it was something that was coveted and that I wanted, but then maybe, I didn't want it because then it might out me or something like that, you know? So it's about I think my work, I'm hoping to sort of engage with loading them with color and objects or references to objects and what they signify, that I'm engaging memory, that I'm engaging sort of time and memory and an ability to reflect, but also create new narratives as well.
Yeah, so interesting. I really enjoy talking to you about this. There's another image I'd like to talk about, more or less. And this one, you know, it's almost like a Hopper-esque kind of what is happening with these two figures, but also the colors and layout is just wonderful in this space. You know, it recalls an era. There's obviously like a kind of art within this art, right? There's a number of layers of things going on, windows in multiple directions. The title is curious because it doesn't lead me the way some of the others do, but it appears to be a couple. Is that correct?
Yes, it's a couple. And those are also, there's their figures. That's Diana Ross in the foreground and Billy Dee Williams in the background. They are literally pulled from stills that were taken in my most recent viewing of Mahogany, which I've watched a gazillion times. And, you know, there's something interesting about that film, and that film for me, obviously it was rated R. I was way too young to see it. But I wanted to see it. And I love the idea of this, of aspiration and the personal pursuit of the American dream, but through a Black cultural lens. And, you know, I think it was pretty amazing for the storyline is a Person living in Chicago, the lead character that's played by Dana Ross, she wants to become a famous fashion designer, but she can't really escape her environment and doesn't have the resources. And what happens is that she's discovered by a famous photographer and becomes this epic supermodel. But what she really wants to do is come home. And she's in love with Billy Dee Williams, who is an aspiring politician and community activist. So they both have dreams, and they both have a complicated relationship, and they end up with each other. So what, and again, lucid dreaming. So the narrative that I perhaps propose in this scene is that the architecture is a bit impossible. You have this vertiginous stair that ascends to some space, but it's kind of floating. And that architecture is made up. It is a stair from one place, a ceiling from another place, walls, and a view of an exterior that is from another place. It's actually a painting. It's from a Grant Wood painting called Young Corn. So I think I'm mixing in all of these pop culture references and also art historical references. I'm wondering what perhaps happened to these two characters if their story, if their narrative was to continue. And the more or less, I think, hints at an irresolution. It's up to the viewer to decide, is it more, is it less? Are we
I
settling?
like
Are we
that.
compromising? Yeah.
Right,
And
we
also
all have different parts of
how
it.
people and how we, in a more general sense, not just specifically this piece, but in maybe all of my work, I'm trying to, I guess, communicate, and not with any answers. These are questions that are being posed, but the notion that our lives are made up of things that represent us, things that draw us, things that we're drawn to, that our lives are a bit of a performance, something sort of like a film. But we are the stars of our film. And then if we have that kind of intentionality about it, what are our movies good? Are they bad? Are they more or less what we want? Or are they more or less not what we want? So, it's kind of just sort of like posing a domestic scene in a way that prompts contemplation. I think I'm also asking the viewer to do some work.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I so enjoyed talking about these. There's this one other I wanted to mention, trying to remember the future. This is a still life, and since we have some of the same references, it seems that globe in the foreground looks almost like M.C. Escher, which was a popular artist at one point, that I remember as a kid just being like wowed by, right? So there's a number of things happening here. We're going into the picture plane. We're coming out of it. There's a window or a mirror that seems to be looking behind or ahead, and there seems to be in this one a lot of back and forth that way, right? There's
Well,
a
I think
book these
so,
times.
but again, the title tells you, trying to remember the future. So, the elements, and this is consistent in my work and in my practice, but it's this compression of time. And also this one is very personal. So the flowers in the vase they're Casablanca lilies. We grow them in our garden in Connecticut. And so those are actually flowers that I photographed. And then the framed photo on the table is my grandmother when she was a toddler. The license plates on the car are old license plates from our station wagon when we lived in Iowa. So again, this is personal. The wallpaper that is the backdrop of this still life is I designed it in 2004 or 5. And it's all kind of a travel through my creative work, but also my personal life. And then I think with all of my work, also something that is pretty consistent is that there's some things that actually don't quite make sense. So where that mirror is set and what's reflected in that mirror, I'm not sure that you would have that exact view of the car. Mm. Not that it matters, but it's not something that would be that you would be able to recreate in real life. The things are set in different planes. There's different depths of field because I am interested in, there's different kind of resolution. So with photography, something can be fuzzy, something can be out of focus, something can be grainy. So if you pull apart the different components of this composition, they're from all different sources. So they're going to have different resolutions. They don't necessarily go together or belong together or have ever been placed next to each other. This is all through sort of my lucid dreaming and my imagination. So, and a fearless kind of why not, which I always think is a fun question. Why not? And then just putting them together and see what happens. Like sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But in this one, I think it works very well. And there's something with, there's something surrealist about this too, because there's butterflies flying in the foreground in front of the flower vase that are not butterflies. They're brooches. They're bejeweled.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So as you look at the different objects, you're wondering why they're there, what they're saying. And I don't know that there's any clear answers. And that is a process of engagement that is endlessly fascinating to me. I know what I think about it. I'm bored by that. I'm really interested to know what you think about it.
Right. We all have so many references. I mean, and that's what, in part, what you're saying, right? There's so many things I relate to these, but they're also specific tips. You know, this idea of that kind of bike, of this kind of coloring, the things that, for me anyway, bring out very specific childhood memories that are of course specific to me.
Yes, but that's really important because I think this sort of journey or tension sometimes between the personal and the general, the intimate and the public, and these things that we can sort of share through the objects, through our relationship with the objects that are placed there. So, you know, I think that even though there are these small Easter eggs of personal things that depending on who you are, if you had a shared kind of cultural upbringing, then you might recognize some of these things. But it doesn't mean that, like, you could do it as an American, you could maybe as a queer person, maybe as whatever our combination of identities are, it helps us in how we read the objects that I place in the composition. And again, they're representations of objects, they're not real objects, right? They're photographs of objects. So what information is there and what information is not there? What is that? The Cartier clock that's on the table of the still life, where's that from? Where's the Mercedes? You know, like I am simultaneously evoking, but also complicating our relationships with these objects.
I love that. It's been such a pleasure talking with you, Ron. For listeners, of course, there's more links to find out more and get more involved and learn more. I want to ask you one more question before we go a little off topic. What are you reading at the moment?
I am desperately trying to finish because I started a while ago and it's not, it's a memoir. It's not even very long, but Margot Jefferson's Negroland. It's about her upbringing in the black bourgeoisie of Chicago mid-century. And it's a fascinating read, and she's a really, really good writer. And there's a lot of it that I really identify with. So that's what I'm on. And I literally only have about about 20 pages left, and I'm mad at myself for not being able to.
You're close.
Being able to have enough space to like finish it and savor it the way I'd like. But that is what I'm currently reading.
Ron, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today. It's really been a pleasure. Thank you for your time.
Brainerd, thank you. And I want to say really quickly that I became aware of you and your show several years ago when I was contemplating how I could do this more as my profession and less sort of secretively. And your show and your voice was one of the lights. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you and your audience.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.